The PGA Tour presents the fusion of golf, music, sports, and entertainment. Golf Talk America, streaming live on PGATour.com. Follow us today and every day on Twitter at Golf Talk America. Now, the Golf Talk America crew.
And welcome in, everybody. Frank Bassett joining you today. Tim Matthews is missing in action today. He'll be back with us the latter part of the week. So we decided to get the show, put it in a suitcase, and leave town. So no Dallas, Tim's in Chicago, no Nashville. I am in a different city, a place that I have a great affection for. The first sponsor of Golf Talk America when we launched this show almost 8 years ago. And we're at the French Lick Resort, and we're sitting on top of the second, I guess the second highest point in Indiana, overlooking the Pete Dye course, and brought a few friends in to do some stuff here today. My good friend, Mr. Brendan Sweeney with the French Lick Resort.
Hey, good morning. Buddy. How are you today?
Good. After last night, I'm okay.
We did. We went saw some of the finer things in French Lick.
Yeah, well, we drank some of the finer things, too, and it was really good. That was great wine.
Absolutely.
It was good stuff on your tab, too. That was a beautiful thing.
Well, we tend to... Take care of people when they come up here.
Yes, yes, you do. This place just gets more magical every year that we come up. The golf course is in perfect condition. It's ready for a lot of guests and a lot of play, and a couple of us are going to get out there and play today. But let's bring in, there's been a border crossing that we've found out about, and this man has been a friend of mine since we started this show. He was a co-host on this show at one time when we were going through different people and testing, and Mark thankfully filled in and saved my bacon to keep this thing alive when we lost a couple of hosts. But the host of Golf Talk Canada, the man is also on television in Canada, will be doing his TV show at 10:45 here Eastern Time today, live. He also is part of our PGA Tour play-by-play team and probably one of the most excitable guys you'll ever listen to doing play-by-play. And that's Mr. Mark Zucchino of Golf Talk Canada.
Frank, you know what I noticed? First of all, thanks for having me.
Oh, it's great.
I'm only about 5'7 and a half.
Yeah.
And the wall on the north border is so short, I get over
it.
You
jumped it.
No worries.
You jumped it.
Yeah, I just hopped the north border. I went, that's more of a fence. That's like a white picket fence. I just kind of hopped over it, and I'm glad to be here.
So well, with your golf clubs, no doubt.
And quickly, let's bring in another good friend of ours from Louisville, Kentucky, WLKY, the sports director from WLKY, Mr. Fred Calgill.
John,
Fred,
good morning. How are y'all?
It's good to have you here.
Great to be here.
After the Kentucky Derby, it's great to see you.
Still alive. Got through it all. Just still recovering, as you can hear from my voice. Yes.
So anyway, so we're all here in the sunroom at the Pete Dye Mansion. And this is a better show. Tim, you're fired. You're gone, Tim. You're out. Tim was the sports director of CBS in Dallas,
that's funny.
And so Fred's got a better voice.
Wow.
So
and
sorry,
he's with
Tim.
CBS as well.
There you are.
Yeah. So CBS.
Tim, you're out. I'm in. That's it. Goodbye.
Thank you very much.
Just moving full time to French Lick sounds like the plan. Actually,
there are worse places.
Yeah.
So we actually have Golf Talk North America.
Yes,
combined,
is,
right?
Yes.
Now.
Really? We're just missing Golf Talk Mexico. That's it, or we'd have it covered. So maybe Freddie Albers.
The wall's taller.
We'll just get Freddie. Freddie Albers.
Set
Fred. Just take a taxi south, Freddie, and set up. And he can. And
just
we're good.
Set a box of Krispy Kremes outside. He'll smell them. Fred will be here in a New York second, baby. We love Fred. Fred Albers is again part of the PGA Tour play-by-play team. But so we gathered together this morning to have some fun, play some golf here today. Mark, you'll be doing your show, I said at 10:45, correct?
Yeah, every Tuesday we shoot Golf Talk Canada television, and once in a while we're on location, so happy to be here doing it. My host or co-host will be back in the studio in Toronto, and great to be doing it on locale, so it's good, but I've never been here before. I'm blown away by this place. Like, I you know that, Brent. Like, I've been going, really? Really? Like,
what's your first impression? You pulled in last night.
Like, off the charts wow factor, which you don't expect. And like, and I got to watch how I say here, because I don't want to insult anyone. But I drove for 2 hours of nothing and then pulled into, like, well, this is charming.
That's because you were driving south.
No, but I pulled in.
Wait
and
a minute
I go,
here.
This, I said, this town is charming, and then this, and I'm like, okay, what's that? And then I pull, and then what? The first building.
West Baden.
West Baden. I'm like, okay. And then we pull in the front. I'm like, okay, into the French Lick Resort building. I'm like, and it just gets better and better and better. You get to the lobby. You see all that gold leaf and the paintings and the story on the ceiling. And you're like, okay. And it's like, honestly, I said to the, I go, we just went walk back 150 years in time.
1845. Right?
Yeah. And then, of course, haven't seen a golf course yet. You know, saw Larry Bird's 33s. Yep. Last night, that was fun. Thank you for hosting. Wonderful time. So very, the first impression is fantastic. Then you get up here this morning to the Pete Dye course.
A foggy morning.
Foggy morning. But, you know, we're looking at it all,
in more ways than one.
You know, we're looking, yeah, for some, Frank.
Yes.
So we're here to shoot our golf travel comedy show this week, which
is called
Off the Hosel, which will be debuting on Amazon Prime. Video this fall, and of course we're going to play the idiot tees. My partner and I, Dave and I, because we're idiots, so
yes,
we're going to play the idiot tees. We're playing
8102
yards,
8102,
which will be the longest golf course both of us have ever played.
Carl
in our life.
Paulson shot 2 under on the back nine here.
That's
after he had played 18.
That's a lot. And really. That's very good.
Yes, so your challenge now to
Craig Bowden, who just wrapped up. He played in the club pro championship, and he qualified for the senior KitchenAid senior PGA championship. He holds the record here from Bedford, Indiana.
One under par.
KitchenAid was doing something this weekend.
When you
too,
pull up
they?
Here for is this your first time here?
No, I've been here a few times.
Okay,
what's your handicap? First of all,
I'm a scratch. I'm a zero.
Really?
Yeah, and so is Dave. So we used to play competitive golf. We actually in one of our episodes we played a Ryder Cup match against Dennis and Carl Paulson, Dave and I, and it was very competitive. It was good. Those guys are awesome players and so fun to be around. But anyway, pulling up here to this high spot as the fog lifts,
yes.
I mean the wow factor is off the charts. Oh. So good. I can't wait to get out there and get beaten up.
So wait a minute, Fred. They're scratch, and we're going to play them.
We are?
So they're going to give us a stroke of hole.
I'm a 36.
Yeah, me too.
I've heard this
name
before.
At the very least, an 18.
I'll go with my waist size.
I'm going to shot a hole, no problem. I'm in.
I've heard this story before, right?
Yeah.
One thing you'll note, if there's one constant theme out there, it's the dramatic elevation changes. It's spectacular. I mean, the 11th hole out there, the 11 and 12 are just wonderful. You get there, and you're like, what? This is an 11 with the highest point on the golf course.
Yep.
On the highest tee there, it's a par 4. It's not that long, probably 375-ish, and it's a big drop.
315 from the top tee.
Gotcha. So we're standing there for the first time, and the caddy's like, so obviously you want to hit in the fairway and all that, but I want to warn you, if you miss to the right, it's 5 stories down. I'm like, oh, you mean from the tee here down to the fairway? He goes, no.
From the fringe. Yeah, it is.
From the edge of the rough down. It's 5 more stories. And guess where I hit it?
5 stories.
All the way down there.
There you go.
Yeah, there you are.
But here's the deal. On that hole, you're up on that elevated tee box, and you look out there, and it's like trying to hit a golf ball off a tee box and land it on a balance beam.
Well,
that's how narrow that fairway looks.
Well, that's the thing. I got to tell you. I'm thinking to myself, 8,100 yards, this and that. And I go, oh, there's going to be a beast. And I'm thinking to myself, because I've never been here before, you try to check it out online and whatnot, do some research, and you go, okay, well, you know, from 8,100, the targets must be massive. And, we must be 7,000-8,000 square foot greens. And,
Are you kidding me?
No. Pulling in here today, I'm like, that's a billiards table.
That's what he said.
The green is
it was
nuts.
Great. When Pete Dye came up here originally, he walked the course, and he came back to Steve Ferguson and Dave Harner. Steve's our director or our owner, and Dave is our director of golf. He says, I can't do it. And then he got home, and he was doodling around, literally on a napkin. He goes, okay, I figured it out. Meet me at this little diner. So they met in Mooresville, halfway between Indianapolis and here. And he sketched on a napkin. Pete did it. And they said, okay. So when they came up, when you see all the forest around us, that is what this land was like. And he moved like millions and millions of cubic tons of dirt to have the masterpiece that's up here right now. So he had unlimited.
Trucks. How many trucks?
Oh.
24/7.
Can you count them?
They were running dump trucks 24/7 for how long? It was
a couple months.
Yeah, months.
A couple months. And they found a sand deposit up here. So we got lucky that we had to find a bunch of sand. So way back when in the Stone Age, the sand came in and it was here. So
unbelievable.
It was good.
Well,
but Pete exceeded an unlimited budget. So
well, you get what you pay for, gentlemen.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to you guys getting out there.
Yeah.
And you said you're going to walk it, huh?
Well, we figure, you know, part of our show is we like to abuse one of another. It's not a regular travel show, as right. you know. We like to put each other in Speedos and shame each other on the beach.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's about having fun. So we thought, if we're coming here, you know, and part of the story
Italian
has to
in
be
a Speedo in French Lake, Indiana, you could get arrested for that.
I think so, especially carrying a large salami in my right hand.
Oh, Lord.
Okay.
So this is PGH
again?
Radio.
He may be dreaming big. I'm not sure.
Please. Anyway, we're having some fun.
And
we're right canceled. it's over. Ponte Vedra, we're sorry.
We're sorry.
Okay.
I can't
get back on the rails.
My job's not online. My job is to bring you guys here.
And we just abused the place.
Yes. The rest of us were on our own.
So let's, on our own. There goes my Augusta broadcast career.
Let's switch gears for a minute because we have the man from Louisville who is, he loves horse racing. Absolutely loves it. It's his passion, and not the money side of it, but just his passion.
An equestrian aficionado.
There you are, sir.
There you go.
Yes, sir.
Tell us about the Derby because it cost me money.
Cost a lot of people money.
Actually,
it's still costing people money.
It cost me money because I took your tips.
Exactly.
For the second year in a row.
I know. I backwheeled the 7. Full disclosure, I'm all about, telling everybody the way it is. From a financial standpoint, I did lose because of the decision. For people who were in a cave on the first Saturday in May, Maxim Security, the 7, won the race and was DQ'd. The first racehorse in the 145-year history of the Kentucky Derby, the biggest race in the world, taken down for an action on the track, the first winner taken down. So, and to back up, on the far turn for home, the leader, the 7, Maxim Security, drifted to the right. He saw it was pouring that day and at race time, and there was a pool of water on the track, and there was a reflection from a light on the infield on that pool of water, and this horse saw that and veered to the right. To his credit, the jockey grabbed the horse and moved forward and prevented a catastrophe. But in the process, other horses were hit. That's where the debate begins. They cross the wire. The horse that came in second, Country House, his jockey files an objection, even though he wasn't involved in the traffic. Tyler Geffion, who was on the 1, War of Will, who received the most abuse down on the rail, was actually hit 3 times by, among others, Country House, does not file an objection right away. Stewards do not file an objection at all or an inquiry at all. So the first jockey to file the objection is on a horse that has a vested interest in the outcome because he can be bumped up for the win, which is exactly what happened. The second jockey who files an objection, John Cortez on Long Range Toddy, files an objection only after the first guy does. Objections have been filed before in the Kentucky Derby, not very often, but they've never held up about a winner being taken down. In this case, the stewards, 3 of them, unanimously ruled that there was interference, and they knocked him down to 17th and bumped up everybody else 1 through 16. So, where do we go from here is the question. Well, the debate continues to rage. I mean, it is far from quiet at anybody for a whole bunch of reasons. I said at the time, and I still stick by this, this never would have happened if we didn't have the issues in Santa Anita last December. From December through March, there were 23, now there have been a couple more since, at least 25 breakdowns of racehorses.
Yeah.
Either in training or in races, and they were humanely destroyed. Since that time, there has been an enormous political push in California by PETA, the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, to get a ballot issue to vote out horse racing. PETA has about 600,000 members, signed members, in California, which would be enough, easily, to get something on the ballot. This would dramatically alter. I mean, you talk about rocking the world. This is rock the horse racing world.
Well, if you look at what happened in Florida with dog racing, the greyhounds have been outlawed. Right. So they have 2 years to get rid of all the dogs.
And circuses, same situation. Not necessarily a competitive
thing. Well, the elephants.
But,
that was
right,
a big
exactly,
deal.
Exactly. So this is, and there are many, many layers to this. Immediately, Santa Anita said, well, we're going to now ban race day medication. They tried to take the emphasis off their track and the problems that their track may have been having and tried to point fingers in the other direction. The reality is that Los Angeles last winter had one of the worst winters historically in the history, modern-day history of the city and the area. Torrential rain, unusual cold. It's a desert. And so backing up about 10 years, the Santa Anita was a dirt track, and they changed it to fake dirt because they believed that that would help the situation with breakdowns. Well, it didn't. so they went back to real dirt. When they reconfigured the track for real dirt, there's a concern that what they put in underneath may have compromised somehow, and then with this weather, only made it worse.
Could it go back to breeding? I know we spoke about this prior, but
it's another level.
If you're taking a super horse and taking the sperm and the embryos from the other horses,
right. Another super horse, another super horse,
and then you weaken.
Well, inbreeding is one problem, and there's no question that's gone on in modern times. 200 years ago...
We're still talking about horse racing, right?
Yes, exactly, exactly. 200 years ago, the sport was in huge trouble because of inbreeding, so they outbred to Arabians, and it strengthened the breed. Well, since then, they've gone back to inbreeding again. At the same time, because of drug use in America, which is not used around the rest of the world, Lasix being the biggest one, an anti-bleeding medication, you're now promoting horses who are successful who have a genetic anomaly to bleed. And so that's also created problems. So, and you're also breeding for speed. Like I said, there are a lot of layers to this. When you breed for speed, meaning horses that come to hand quickly in shorter races, the downside to that is they become more fragile more quickly. You're putting babies in there that are the equivalent of 11 and 12-year-olds in human years into racing because owners want instant gratification. If you spend $500,000 on a horse, you want it to come to racing as soon as possible. So horses are, while they're born year-round, as far as the sport is concerned, they're born on January 1st. So you can have a baby who's only a year and a half old going to the races, even though he really is legally two. So they put him in there that quickly. Speed horses tend to come to hand faster. Endurance horses, like for the Kentucky Derby, tend to come to hand later.
There are three-year-olds in the Derby.
Right, exactly. Many of whom are still two, for the same reasons we're talking about with the calendar. So, but the difference now is, because there's been so much of an emphasis of breeding for speed, they're breeding more and more problems into the game as well. Yes.
There you go. The equestrian edition of Golf Talk America on PGA Tour Radio.
Well, yes.
That is so incredibly interesting because he's so deep into the weeds of this thing.
Well, and there are a lot of problems ahead. If you told me now that what they did on the Kentucky Derby Day would help solve these problems, I would have been all in, but it doesn't do anything. The problem now is that they suspend a jockey 15 days, and all he was trying to do was control his horse and did a great
job.
And
he saved carnage on the race
course.
Absolutely.
And that,
so getting penalized for making a veteran play.
The stewards punished him for speaking out and saying, you know, that they shouldn't be taking him down. They're punishing the owner, who's sued in federal court now to try to overturn this. I mean, and the stewards are unaccountable. It's written into Kentucky law that the steward's decision is final, and the owner has no appeal process, none, which is against the American way.
If, and it won't happen, obviously, because the law states so, but if that were to happen, what happens with the monies?
The money's already distributed. I said that if I had been Mr. West, Gary West is the co-owner with his wife, I would have, on the Monday after the Derby, filed an injunction in federal court to prevent Churchill Downs from distributing the purse. And now, the money's gone in terms of the betting, but frankly, he doesn't care about that. He wants the money, and he wants the gold trophy, which goes with the
Kentucky. Well, the breeding rights, too.
All of that.
Well, all that.
And so now they've gone to federal court and sued. Now, whether that's going to... But the purses have already been distributed.
Right.
They'd have to be paid back and all that. Who knows where that's going to go. But there are many, many, many bigger issues about this. And the biggest one, frankly, I still believe this environment is so volatile. This could go in a lot of directions. There's a whole issue of what happens to animals, horses, after their racing careers are over. There are slaughterhouses in Mexico and Canada, and many of them end up there. 10 years ago, the foal crop, the number of horses, thoroughbreds born, was about 40,000. This year, it was 20,000. That's because of the financial crisis in 2008, at the meltdown, and suddenly there's just less money in the sport. That said, you still have 20,000 racehorses, most of whom do not meet a happy ending.
Right.
Because of just the numbers. There's no place to put them, and it's enormously expensive to keep a horse going long after its racing career is over. Horses can live to be 30 years old. So many of them end up in slaughterhouses. So this has created all of this conversation right now. And the problem is because the games are all broken up by states, there's no federal czar. There's no Pete Rozelle, who is the famous commissioner of the NFL, who basically laid the foundation for the enormous success of the NFL today. There's no guy there who has the power to oversee all of this because the states run their own games. The states also have a vested interest because they're getting about 15% of the action in their pockets in every bet that's put down. So you have an enormous problem. And, you know, to me it's kind of like the traffic stop, you get a traffic light after so many accidents. You know, somebody's going to have a horrific accident, and then they're going to do more than just put a traffic light in there. Well, that's kind of like what I believe is going to happen in horse racing. We're going to see something horrible. It could have happened this year on May 4th. Luckily, it didn't. I mean, in the biggest race in the world. Had he wiped out the field, which could have easily happened, and does happen. I mean, it's the only sport in the world where an ambulance follows the participants. Literally. I mean, there's an ambulance. When they go off, there's an ambulance following the whole way around.
We're going to change that tomorrow when we play from 8100.
There you are. On the first team.
Right.
8102 follow these two idiots walking with an ambulance behind.
Fred Calgill, like sports director at WLKY, joining us with his knowledge of the Kentucky Derby and horse racing in general. And if you're, like he said, if you were under a rock, you know, and didn't see that race and see what happened, it was a topic of conversation on every sports show for weeks. I mean, it has been.
You know what I find so interesting about it, something you touched on there too, because if you look at horse racing and you can look at other sports that at one time, and horse racing still has a huge following. Kentucky Derby is one of the biggest events in all the sport. It transcends its own sport. Very similar to what the Masters does for golf. My grandmother watched the Masters. She didn't know the difference between a golf ball and a volleyball, but she watched the Masters.
Well, it's a spectacle.
Right,
it's a spectacle.
Super Bowl. How many people?
Attrition like no other.
Right, attrition. How many people?
There's a line.
There's a line. Can you use that? I'll call Jim.
How many people do you know watch the Super Bowl? It's the only football game they watch. So well, to me, that's the Kentucky Derby.
The Silver Cup.
There's and this, we talk about that, the issues that we have in horse racing. We do. I'm from Tennessee or live in Tennessee. And right down the road from Nashville, we know about the walking horse issues that have been going on with these. What is it called? Soaring is what they do?
Yeah, this is not my huge area of expertise, although I did go to school at UT.
I see that orange on. I went to Ole Miss. Remember that.
Yes, so, I do.
That's why you wore it, because he's playing me today. Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay, great.
The hard part about this particular sport, I mean, every sport has its layers. And there's a certain faction, maybe 15 or 20% that really understand everything and have the ability to do something about it. And then for me, it's the other 85% that I worry about, because at the end of the day, image is reality.
Yes.
There's a trainer who won the Kentucky Oaks this year. His name is Tom Amos. He's on TVG a lot. He's a really good, articulate guy and broadcaster as well as a trainer. He had this horse, Serengeti Express, who wins the Oaks after bleeding in a race. Her previous start, she was down in Arkansas and bled profusely. They had to pull her up, bleeding out of the nostrils.
Out of the nostrils, yeah.
It is, yes. And for most horses, they never are the same again. I took a stand against her in the Oaks because of that, even though I know Tom and I'd seen the horse and she was working out great, and she ends up romping in the Oaks and wins. But I did an interview with him where he boiled it down. He's a huge fan of Lasix, a huge believer. And there is a large body of people who have long credentials who support the use of Lasix because it's the best for the horse. People who have credibility, veterinarians, people have no dog in the fight. And Tom is one of those guys. But then he said to me, you know, it comes down to this, it's as simple as this. I want the end to be around in 5 years. Image is reality. If we don't change, we may not have a game left.
Yeah.
And I would say that about the NFL. I would say that about Tennessee walking horses. I mean, at the end of the day, it is the same thing. We know all the minutiae, but it's that simple thing of what people think. To your point about the Kentucky Derby or, you know, the biggest race or whatever it happens to be, if they think this...
If that's the image. If that's the image you leave on the American public.
Rewind the tape to
the world when it comes to the Derby.
2008, I'm almost positive. 8 bells, Philly finishes second in the Derby and crosses the finish line. And in her efforts to almost win the race, she always was a horse that kind of was very low to the ground. She trips, snaps her front two legs.
Oh.
They put her down on the track.
I remember that.
Had that happened in this environment, I mean, it would have been, I mean, I can't even imagine where we'd be right now.
You know, again, though, to your point about several minutes ago, talking about having no national coverage, we look at all these sports, and you can go after them one at a time. You look at the ones that have thrived in the last 20, 30 years. They had a strong leader at the top. They had national coverage. You look at all the sports that have taken hits, dips, on the verge of going away. Boxing is the perfect analogy, but there's more than just boxing. There's a bunch of them that used to have, you know, 70s and 80s. It looks like the boom, they were going to grow, and then it stopped, and nothing happened, and some have retracted, and they all have that one item in common. All these little different
strong
bosses.
Leadership.
Reminds me of the old wrestling days,
and we have
right?
that. We have that on the PGA Tour. I mean, we've had strong leadership from Dean Beeman's vision to
right
Tim Fincham's growth of the game and bringing it to a totally different level. And Tiger Woods had a little bit to do with that, too.
Sure.
And now Jay Moynihan, who's taken over as the commissioner of the PGA Tour.
And with all due respect to Tiger. With all due respect to Tiger, who, you know, Arnold Palmer and Tiger Woods, in my opinion, those are the only two that ever really certainly moved the needle to talking about changing the way the sport truly operates. If you don't have leadership at the top of the organization, PGA Tour, those players come along. That doesn't help. You need somebody to take that and do something with.
Michael Wann.
I didn't mean to leave him out. What a great leader. He's a great leader.
The LPGA got down to like 18 tournaments. Now they're up to 35.
Yeah. Right. And you guys are doing a tournament here. The senior LPGA.
We have two of them.
Two of them. And the Symetra Tour.
Symetra Tour event in July. And then in October, the senior LPGA championship.
Yeah.
You've got to have the power. You have to be, whoever's in charge has to have the stomach for the fight because you have all the politics to this. Yeah. And boxing, you know, it fragmented. Car racing, IndyCar racing.
Same one.
The sport almost went under. Yeah. I mean, attendance in Indy was at an all-time low 15
years ago. Is that what you're talking about, when they split it with CART? Yeah.
And so now Indy's enjoying, I mean, they got their act together.
Resurgence,
there's a huge resurgence. So, I mean, horse racing is at that crossroads. My concern is that there's nothing in place that I can see that can possibly move this in a positive direction.
Yeah.
I mean, because
there is no leadership.
There is no organization. Yeah. There is an organization, the National Thoroughbred Racing Association, which was a nice idea, but had no teeth.
Right.
So, I mean, it gets back to the same thing. So you have the states, but then you also have the tracks. You have Churchill Downs and Keelan, two of the most high-profile tracks in the world, and suddenly they make an announcement a few months ago, hey, we're going to start building tracks down on the south end of the state. But there are no racing licenses. How are you going to do that? They didn't go to the Kentucky. In fact, the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission told them, please don't get any ideas. We're not going to award licenses for the foreseeable future. They did it anyway. I mean, okay, so there's a whole issue of, now Churchill Downs has announced they're phasing out race day medication Lasix over the next 2 years. So the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission is the one who administers the Lasix. Trainers, or the owners actually pay a fee, and the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission oversees the administration of Lasix and the post-race testing of all of the participants that are necessary for a particular race. Did Churchill Downs go to the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission and say, we're going to phase out Lasix? No. So is it going to be the honor system that the trainers just voluntarily quit using Lasix? How are they going to test?
Does every state have thoroughbred racing?
No.
I'm
guessing about 40 states-ish have some form of a paramutual thoroughbred horse racing, either in fairs, because some of it, at the end of the day, goes back to the old fair tracks, which is where in my wheelhouse very much. I go back upstate New York, it's some of the coolest thing ever. And harness racing as well.
So yeah, the trotters.
Yes.
Unfortunately, in these situations, and I hate to say it, but unfortunately, usually in these situations, it takes to the point where there's nothing left to fight about regionally before someone gives up the power to say, okay, lead us, because we have nothing left to fight about because we've lost everything.
Well, you know, I relate it to music too, and symphonies in cities. Louisville, for instance, their symphony was bankrupt. In other cities, the symphonies are going bankrupt because of poor leadership. That's what happens. And we've become a Sunday talk show here, it seems like, today, which is really good. It's great information for our listeners. It's not right on the golf realm, but we're the fusion of golf, music, sports, and entertainment.
So we're right on.
Can I say that fast?
Damn it. On point.
As far as I'm concerned, we're right where we are. Right in the lane then.
Yeah, we are. That's the voice of Mark Zucchino, host of Golf Talk Canada, part of the PGA Tour Radio play-by-play team, Mr. Excitement out on the course.
How many tournaments are you doing?
I do 12 to 13 a year, roughly, PGA Tour Radio. I've got 5 or 6 left for the season. I'll do RBC Canadian Open in a couple weeks, so kind of a home game.
Are you coming to Memphis for the first WGC?
No, I am not, but I've done that event before. Not when it was a World Golf Championship event, but I did it as the old...
I took you boys to the rendezvous
we had a great night. Yeah. I've got RBC Canadian Open. I've got the new event in Detroit, the Rocket Mortgage in Detroit.
We'll be there,
I didn't know about this. Right?
New one in Detroit in a couple weeks. Then I'll open the playoffs at the Northern Trust at Liberty National, which is one of my favorite events of the year. Kicking off the playoffs, one of my favorites. Absolutely.
There's some guy that owns that.
Yes.
Yeah. Trump. Okay, gotcha.
The property there, it's unique, isn't it?
It's very unique.
Was it a former landfill?
It was a former landfill. And, you know, what's interesting about Liberty National is when that course first came on tour and hosted the Barclays, the original kickoff event, now the Northern Trust, it wasn't the most popular golf course on the PGA Tour. The guys did not care for it. They've gone in a couple of times recently, softened a few of the lines, changed it, and now it's a popular spot. And I think, you know, being from somebody who spends a lot of time in America and has friends and family in America but isn't American, there's something special to me about handing out a big trophy at the bottom of the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah, no kidding.
Like, to me, with the backdrop of Manhattan and the foot of the Statue of Liberty, and you're handing out something as important as the first playoff event or a President's Cup a couple years ago, I'm like, to me,
That's like a deal. That's a big deal.
That's American, right? Like I get pumped when we do it. So for me, I'm really looking for that's my that's the marquee event for me this year on PGA Tour Radio. I, you know, with all due respect to all the events I've been at, that I'm so looking forward to that.
What doing play by play for golf, is that different than other play by plays, and if so, in what way?
As a total
fan of the game, I'm curious. Yeah, I've only done it a couple of times.
You know, I think what makes it a little different from a play by play standpoint, not from a color standpoint, but from a play by play standpoint, is in most sports a play by play, you're kind of reacting to what you're seeing at all times, you know. Puck comes over the blue line, dumps it in the corner, cycle it behind the net, out front shot, you know, whatever. In golf, a lot of times you're not reacting to what you're seeing because you're talking a lot, doing play-by-play, a lot about the situation because no one's pulled the trigger yet, right? So there's a lot more setup about what is going to happen and what could potentially happen before you actually call what is happening in front of you. So you're doing a lot of color within the play-by-play itself. Where I think in a lot of other sports, play-by-play is just play-by-play, and then your color guy comes in and does the sizzle. Yeah. So
you get Mark Zucchino, white shorts, green shirt, red hat.
Exactly. Yes, the Italian flag or a Christmas tree. Okay.
Exactly. One of the classic lines of all time, when I was shadowing Doug Bell.
Who I love to
death. Doug's the best.
I love all the guys that work with, but he's a beautiful man.
And so Freddie Albers was with us. This was early in my little new career.
Yeah. Life. Christy does play in a senior.
I asked Fred, I said, so Fred, you said it's about a 27-footer left to right downhill slider, right? How do you know it's 27 feet? He said, Frank, it's radio. And then he said, no, they're telling me in my ear. They tell us they give the stats.
I wondered about that.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've got
you get some information.
Well, we do have a few different ways of getting exact information, right? So our producer, Alan Trexler, in our ear can fire us yardage. Scoreboards can have yardage. The shot link stands and volunteers on the golf course, we can go to ask them. A CBS or NBC Walker. So there's many different ways we can get numbers. 90% of the time, it's coming from our producer in our ear.
Like clubs? How do you know? Like
clubs, we don't get as much as they do.
He's hitting a 6-iron.
I'll tell you why we don't get. Well, I'll tell you why we don't get clubs as much as they do on TV. And this is some people.
They got a guy behind him doing this.
Right. So
really?
When you're on TV,
I didn't know that.
When you're covering television. Because you don't need to see anything.
Sure.
You've got monitors. You've got help. You're not calling. Actually, you're barely speaking. And I've worked a couple times doing some TV for PGA Tour Live at 17 and 12 at Sawgrass, the live from coverage.
Yes.
I've hosted that a couple times, given Mr. Brian Katrick, who does an incredible job,
giving
him a break.
And they'll be here for the Listeners' Cup in August.
And he's a great golfer, and I love John McGinnis. Is like one of my favorite people to listen to anything, because John
doesn't own a shirt that doesn't have a wine stain.
So,
so we love John, but neither do I, okay? Let's just... Disclosure.
Or a multiple X.
What?
A multiple X.
Okay, well, whatever.
When you're doing
we
TV,
love you, John.
And, you know, the guy's hitting in the shot, and the caddy will, because you're standing on the tee or very close to the player, you don't need to see what's going on. And the caddy will give you the signal.
He really will.
5-iron.
Yeah.
Look, often. For radio, you can't be that close to the player because you've got to be talking all the time.
Sure.
You also have to be describing the shot, which they don't have to do. They wait for the shot to finish. Oh, lovely. That's their job. Like, there's not a real job. Okay?
So you're saying those TV people aren't as good as...
No, it's three times the pay, and they're not as good as...
Wait a minute. So the caddy literally gets that the TV people want to know, and so he'll give you a little
very
signal.
Very much. Where we're behind
that's
the green...
Really, that's awesome.
Yeah, we'll be behind the green. We can't see the caddy. Sure. We're behind the green waiting for the shot to come in, describing what the shot's doing, describing the finish because we need to.
You ever get a dead eye from a pro? Like, you're talking, all of a sudden he goes...
Once a year, I do like a
switch. Who's the last pro that gave you the dead eye?
Last pro to give me the Kevin Chappell's caddy.
Okay.
Was the last time. And that was knocking on wood, not this year, last year.
Okay. Yeah. So this year, you're pretty clean.
Yeah.
So far. Year,
and listen, and they're very, the guys are great. They're not, they're letting you know, hey, you're too close or you're too loud, and that's fine. But it's been a year and a half probably for me. I'm way better at it now than I used to.
Okay, one of the classic calls, and of course we get all the calls, all the interviews and all that for our shows, is a couple of years ago, Mark Emmelman, was calling a Dustin Johnson 4-iron. Now, you're ahead of the shot. Dustin's down the fairway. He is, and Emmelman's on the green. You remember this?
No.
He's calling the shot. He's a 4-iron. Ball's on its way, oh, bap, ow! "Ow!" And it hit him. It hit him while he was calling the shot.
I've been hit once. And funny, it's funny because
it hurts.
This week was the Charles Schwab at Colonial, and 2 years ago I got hit there. Jordan Spieth standing behind the 17th green. Jordan hit me, and I didn't realize I was actually hit. I was standing behind the green.
What?
I didn't realize you were hit.
How can you not realize
he's down? He's down.
Faces down.
Doug Bell and
that man's not. Grab him.
What?
Doug Bell and I are both in the final group, which is rare because usually they spread us out. But the lead pack, the final group, really spread itself apart from the rest of the pack. So they put two. So Doug's calling Jordan Spieth, and I'm calling Ryan Palmer, and they're fighting down the stretch.
And they're two best friends. They're best friends. And
Ryan Palmer's one of the nicest men, men you'll ever meet, right?
Yep.
So I'm standing behind the 17th, and Doug and I are in exactly the same spot with our back against the grandstand behind the 17th green. He's calling Jordan Spieth out of the left rough, and you hear Doug say something in regards to, you know, the lie over there. I had a look. You know, might not be. He's got to worry about the flyer. Apparently, I had to worry about the flyer because it comes over the green, and I'm not calling it. I'm just standing there, and all I feel is like a tick, and my whole headset and the bill of my hat tilts to like this, completely sideways. Bang! I look down, and the ball's standing by my right foot, and my hat's on complete. Caught the bill of my hat, knocked my headset and my hat sideways, and Doug looks at me and goes, "I think you were just hit, right?"
Old-time hockey. Oh,
that's Eddie Shore.
That's Mark Zucchino with PGA Tour Radio and Golf Talk Canada. Brendan Sweeney with the French Lick Resort. And Fred Calgill with WLKY out of Louisville, Kentucky, was nice enough to come over.
And by the way, the number one golf show in Australia.
Thank you. We are the number one golf show in Australia. We found that out at the Masters.
G'day, mates. How you doing out there?
Yeah. Hey,
Eddie.
Boys.
Wow, that's awesome.
Eddie and the Cruisers.
Who knew?
Where is our friend from Eddie and the Cruisers, by the way? Matthew Lawrence.
He's in Lexington, Kentucky.
He should be over here with us.
You got to be. If Golf Talk America is huge in Australia, you should be live on location for the Australian Open. Go to Royal Melbourne or something like that. Play some golf in the sand.
Steve Elkington has already invited me. He said, "Come on, you got to go."
What are you doing, Frank?
I'm still working on my first marriage, so I'm not going.
I understand that. We're having a little fun here at the French Lick Resort. We're at the Pete Dye Golf Course, where Mark Zucchino will be doing his show within the next hour, Golf Talk Canada.
And off the hosel.
Off the hosel. You know, I had to replace my hosels. My grips are fine.
I always say that. I always say to some buddies, I go, you know, if we take them into the pro shop, we'd probably groove those hosels for you.
I need them grooved, baby. I'm using those a lot. So tell us about Off the Hosel.
It is so much fun, a project. We had an idea for a travel show. And, you know, there's a lot of travel shows that kind of been there, done that. You go, here we are here, and we showcase this, and we showcase. Although I'm a travel fan, because I love to travel and play golf, from a viewer standpoint, people have been tuning out of those for quite some time, because they've been done so many times.
Right.
So I have very good friends, Dave Hempstead and Dave Merry, who are stand-up comedians.
The Hammer.
They've been stand-up comedians and brilliant guys for a long time, have not only performed everywhere around the world, but have written for Brad Garrett and Russell Peters and, you know, Carrot Top. Like, they've written with some
Carrot
guys.
Carrot Top from Winter Park, Florida, there by the way. Mm-hmm.
Brad Garrett, wow.
So anyway, we... good friends. They've, you know, they hang in the right crew. These guys have comedy chops, as they say. And I said, Dave and I played a lot of competitive golf together growing up as kids, and we played a lot of junior golf, and then he remained an amateur and went to school actually in Kentucky on a scholarship, and I turned professional in Canada, and. Ever since our relationship, although we're good friends, we hate to lose to one another. And I think everybody in life has that relationship, right?
Yes.
Where you, this is my buddy, but we can't lose to this. And it can't. And it doesn't have to be golf. It could be anything, right?
Sure.
And we said, you know what? This is a great idea for a travel show. Let's go, two idiots, and let's go and play grudge matches at great golf courses. And let's showcase the location and the resort through the show. But let's not make an infomercial. Let's do our match. And the winner always gets treated to something cool. And the loser always gets beaten up somehow, whether it's embarrassment or some type of loss. And that's the hook to the show.
The Zonker Prize.
Yeah, you want to wait to the last. It's a 22-minute episodes because they were originally built for terrestrial television, mm-hmm. just so they can't go there. But it's going to be on Amazon Prime, distributed around the world this fall. So the hook of the show is you get to see great places and watch these two guys beat each other up. Mm-hmm. But the last 5 minutes of the show is always usually the hook, because we usually do something really horrible to the one of us.
So how do you condense 18 holes into 22 minutes?
It's amazing. It's the power of 200 hours of editing with four people getting in a room and fighting about what makes it to 22 minutes. Yeah. And the good news about it is, because of the world we live in now, with the social media world that we live in now, yeah, we have these great 22-minute episodes that tell this really cool story that live on TV. But all this great stuff that sits on the cutting room floor that normally would get lost back in the day.
Plop it on YouTube.
Now belongs on YouTube. Yep. Now gets to Instagram. Now gets tagged to all the places we've been and all the people we've worked with. And now 6 22-minute episodes turn into 12 months of content on 7 platforms.
And outtakes.
And when you came to me with this, with the opportunity of French Lick, I was like, absolutely.
Well, so you are our demo. Like, you're our audience. Like, you would watch this show. I want to see these two guys go to a great golf course, poke fun at each other, set up a cool bet, and someone's going to get beaten up, and someone's going to win something cool. And that's all it is.
And it's a great way for us to showcase our golf course up here.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? And we hopefully get to play some show some good golf along the way. We just got back from Florida, an episode there, and played a really big ballpark there as well. Not as big as this ballpark. And, you know, we made a bunch of birdies and caught some great golf on tape, too. So you're not watching two guys literally hit it off the hosel. You're watching two really good players still. Off the hosel is more to do about what happens off the golf course. Than
I
think
some of that can't be aired.
When you guys, you're going to stretch the rubber band all the way back.
We are. That's a mandate for the show. We always play the tips everywhere we go. And that here is
8102. That's a big ballpark.
We've played the tips along the way, and it's like been 74, and it's been 73, not 81.
But when Pete Dye designed this golf course, he designed it for 20 years down the road. So we've been open for 10 years already. Right. We've hosted 17 championships. Right. No one has even come close to 8102.
I would love to see, I'm just throwing this out there from what I've seen, I would love to see, you want to play U.S. Open, you want to play PGA Championship?
We've had the U.S. GA Men's State Team Championship, which Ken Tawanawa, who won yesterday, participated as an amateur here for the Arizona
But I would
State
love
team.
To see what we just saw at Beth Page. We just saw it at Beth Page, and we saw Brooks Koepka dominate the field with the driver, okay? Mm-hmm. And now some guys, I don't agree with this narrative, but some players in the field said, well, you've just turned the PGA Championship into a long drive contest. I don't agree with that narrative. I thought Beth Page was a really solid test through the bag. I would love to see PGA Championship tighter. A PGA Championship, your second major, right here from 8100.
So in 2015, we hosted a senior PGA.
Yes.
The first day, the weather turned. A front came through. It dropped like 15 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the wind picked up, and 43 guys shot 80-plus out here.
Mm-hmm. What tee
from about 7,000 yards.
Oh, was it just 7?
Yeah.
And it's a tough walking course. Part of it's the physical demands of the golf course. The elevation changes are so dramatic.
Right.
It wears out people. I mean, it really does, especially on the senior tour. But even, I mean, unless you are dead fit and used to doing this, if you're playing a bunch of flat courses, you're not ready for
it. We're going
to
suffer.
You need to be a billy goat.
We're going
to
suffer. Dave and I are not athletes by any means of the imagination.
And you're going to walk.
That's the beauty of radio, because you're spectacular looking right now.
right now, it's George,
you look
George Clooney with a washboard stomach doing Golf Talk America until the TV camera turns on.
And in front of me is George Costanza.
Yeah, George Costanza. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, but we think that's part of the storyline for this episode. We think part of the storyline for this episode is 8102.
Yeah.
Beat yourself up. Yeah. Go, boys. Walk it. And see who's sucking wind at the 14th hole and who can pull the trigger.
I'll bet you by the 11th.
There you go.
What is the hole with the volcano bunker? The real
two?
Back here?
Two. No,
number two.
And 17.
They have a number of volcano bunkers, but there's one, the par five?
Behind
seven.
It?
Yeah, yeah, seven right here. Right
Back. You have to do something fun up there. Okay. It's literally way above the green. It really doesn't come into play.
Right.
But the first time I played here, there were a couple of things where I just stopped it. I have to go up there. And we went up and just started hitting shots out of there for fun.
Oh, we'll do that for sure.
It's impossible
we'll
to keep it on the green from up there.
And it's crazy. For all the listeners up there, we're in the Pete Dye Mansion, which is the old Taggart Mansion. And from this vantage point that we're here, 360, you could see 15 holes of the golf course.
That's yeah.
Really cool. It's very awesome.
That's awesome. Absolutely.
What hole's that with the volcano bunker?
We have seven.
Number seven.
Yeah. It's a par five.
Two and
it's
seven.
It's uphill. Perfect. It's a long par five. That dead back, it's got we'll to be 600
do,
or more.
We'll do a close to the hole bunker for social media there.
How far are you banging your drives?
I carry the ball between 270 and 280.
Yes. Yeah.
Nice. Carry wrong with it. That.
Probably closer to 270 these days.
Yeah,
you I gotta find. I gotta be couple. Honest with you. Like since I lost more weight again, and although I'm,
you're looking like an Olsen twin. For
at least I know. At least I feel better. I feel better, but I have lost yardage. I've lost about 8 yards of carry.
I carry the ball about 292. Then I get out of the car and place it in the fairway.
Now, when you drop it, make
I don't
sure
like
it's all...
this guy. He's with me.
Well, Frank, you got to be very careful that when you drive the golf cart to 292 and you drop it, you got to drop it from knee height now.
Oh, that's right. Oh. So if I get on my knees,
gotta play by the rules.
Is that still legal? I get on my knees, it's knee height.
I get on my knees and pray a lot.
The Tim Conway drop.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. That's why I'm
God you know, bless his rest soul. In peace.
I will tell you, guy. On this golf course during the Senior PGA Championship.
Presented by
Old National KitchenAid. That's KitchenAid. Old National Bank is a big sponsor here also.
For the Senior LPGA Championship, presented by Old National Bank.
There you go. That's deep in the heart of the.
Now, when is the senior? There you go. Okay.
October.
No, let me tell you though. Yep. One of the workers here. I mean, there are places you don't play with a golf cart on this golf course right. because you can really
flip
get hurt.
It, right?
She flipped it end over
boy.
End.
Oh yeah.
Really?
Actually, the kids, down the hill. There were interns from Romania, and Lori Estetis was teeing off.
Yeah.
On the 15th hole, and this kid was going up the hill, and they're like watching him, and all of a sudden it's like
this goes backwards, boom, down the hill.
But we had a series. I mean, it's very. You know, the terrain here is very undulating. And we've had an issue when we first opened, there were golf carts flipping over.
Yeah, I can see that.
And then the golf cart manufacturer, which I won't mention their name, Clip Car, we had an argument with them, and we resolved the issue.
Do y'all, what carts do you have here now?
We have the Easy Goes.
Easy Go.
That's how you solve the issue.
Absolutely.
Great. Great. There
Wonderful.
Goes a potential sponsor
Wonderful.
Right out the door. Yamaha. Yamaha golf carts.
There you go.
Golf cars, I should say. Fred Calgill, Brendan Sweeney, Mark Zucchino, no Tim Matthews, Frank Bassett here for Golf Talk
I will
America.
Tell you this, by the way. At some point,
yes.
by the end of this week, yes. I will talk Brandon Sweeney into letting me bring a foursome here. And staying in the Tagger house because I know it used
to
be able to do it, right?
Yeah, we at this house we have four suites upstairs.
Have you been upstairs?
Yes.
It's unbelievable.
It's haunted. It's haunted.
Yeah.
We had an issue with some guy had a party up here.
Yeah.
And you're totally unsupervised.
Right.
But yeah, he caused some damage, so we said, you know, it's not worth it. It's more of a pain in the ass to do anything.
No.
So.
No.
It is a really cool building.
It is. So I'm like, that would be incredible. Yeah. The building's amazing. The suites upstairs are awesome.
Oh.
And the ladies, I mean, I brought my daughter up here, brought my wife up here, and they're like, they want to lick the walls. I mean, it is absolutely
lead paint, love it.
There you are. Nice.
There is no lead or asbestos.
There we go.
Actually, up in the attic, up with the, yes. the bunker, that is yes. some of the best views. I mean, the entire.
I mean, you're 982 feet. The town, remember I said yesterday? Yeah. There's the water tower way up there. We're looking down the water tower.
There's the water tower behind you. It's down
coming
below
up here, coming up the driveway with you driving this morning, Frank, which scared me, by the way.
I know.
I can still see you shaking from the night before, right? I'm like, if we got pulled over right now in this driveway.
I didn't mention your gastrointestinal problems.
That's right.
Last night, so there.
How late were you boys out? I was a good boy. I went to bed early.
No.
We were up late.
No.
I'm still in Eastern time zone.
That's right.
We are in Eastern time.
I don't know. All I know is I got a text from Frank this morning saying, listen, I'm just clearing up my chit at the bar and I'll pick you up out front.
Yeah.
And I went, hold on, did you go back to the bar or are you just leaving?
The casino's open 24 hours.
That's right.
I didn't know that. Is it really?
Absolutely.
My motto is Waco. We ain't coming out. Once we get in, we ain't coming out. So anyway, it's been fun, guys. We should do this more often. The round table is a lot more fun than just doing a stupid... me and Tim talking show, which Tim does a pretty good job. Miss you, Tim, and would love to have you back. Mr. Sweeney?
I don't miss him.
I know. You got his headset on.
Dang.
Poor
Tough
Tim.
Crowd. Poor Tim.
Poor Tim. Man,
Hi, Tim.
I tell you.
Hi,
hey,
Tim.
Thank you so much for your support. Fred,
thank you.
What's your Twitter account?
At Fred Calgill, WLKY.
There you go. Mark?
At Z-Man Golf, at Golf Talk Canada.
At BSweeney05.
At Golf Talk America. It's pretty simple.
Thanks, Frank.
Thanks, guys. We appreciate it. For Fred Calgill, Mark Zucchino, Brendan Sweeney, I'm Frank Bassett. thanks, everybody, for listening to the show. We appreciate and love each and every one of you, and we will see you soon.